You're listening to Sarah Talk. It's political.
This rhetoric about make America great again. Tell me when America was great and we'll go back there. I'm going with you.
Critical.
Hang on, let me change some words here. All right, ready?
Adults with religious confusion who truly believe in a higher power that created us and actually cares what we do with our penises and vaginas should be treated with care, compassion, and kindness, but must not be officially affirmed in their confusion, no matter how sincerely held.
Fuck you.
And positively LGBT positive.
In many states, you can still be evicted from housing simply for being gay or transgender. Stand and fight with us.
Oh, and occasionally, completely absurd.
I don't know if you've ever seen a lightning bug, but he flies around with a flame, a light coming out of his behind. The lightning bug got a flame coming out of his butt.
It's a beautiful night tonight. All the sodomites are out.
And now, from Orlando, Florida, your host, Sarah Austin.
Welcome to Sarah Talk. I'm Sarah Austin. In the studio with me, as always, my wife, Becca.
Hey, hey.
This episode's going to be a little different. We are not going to do our normal news rip where we take the news. I have a stack of stuff I've been saving up.
Hey,
so.
They say no news is good news.
Well, there's definitely news, especially if you're North Korean. So we're not going to do that today. Today, we're going to just kind of make space for some folks to tell their story. We're going to talk to James and Catherine Blake. James is a writer, public speaker, transgender activist, husband, and father of two with his wife, Catherine, who is also an activist and does many things with the community. So here now is our interview with James and Catherine Blake. What I really wanted to do was just kind of give you a space to tell your story. Having followed the trail of breadcrumbs, got back to your GoFundMe and kind of read the story of your family, and I thought it was very interesting. There are a lot of things that we talk about here on the show that I thought tied in very nicely. That maybe some topics that we kind of talk about in the nebulous, but we've never really heard that lived experience. So I thought that would be interesting to do. But I want to kind of like go all the way back, if you wouldn't mind. You know, you described a small town rural life in Mississippi. And I grew up in a town probably, 4 hours away in Illinois, probably very similar. So that I connected with that right away. Why don't you kind of paint the picture of what that was like growing up?
Wow. It was very much the typical country life that you would think of for myself. Dirt roads, lots of cows, horses, farms everywhere. To begin with, I moved to Mississippi when I was 5 and began school there. And my father was really into farming, and he did that for quite some time. And then eventually, Catherine and I met, and she used to come ride horses with me, and I had ridden since I was, 3 or 4, and she hadn't ridden before, so it was really fun to do those type of activities with someone that hadn't done it before, to get to experience someone riding for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
She spent a lot of time outdoors as well, but her father was really big into fishing, so they would do that a lot. And then my father and I would spend a lot of time together as well. It was very isolating, though, because I was the only assigned female in my countryside neighborhood that was like directly on my side of the highway, and that we could spend time with a lot except for at church.
Mm-hmm.
So I dealt with a lot of isolation, but it was also a lot of freedom. I come home from school and just saddle up my horse and ride to wherever I wanted out in the country. And there was this little store I used to go to a lot that was like a family oriented place. And I would just ride over there and grab lunch and put it on the tab and then go back home. And my dad would pay it once a week, but I don't know if you find places like that anymore, but
yeah,
it was very, very unique growing up that way. I used to walk to church every Sunday, from the time I was 9 until I was 18. It was a lot of good, I guess, raising from the whole community. Like, you know that saying, it takes a village to raise a child. Well, my dad was raising me pretty much on his own. And he was grateful, I guess, to have that there in the community. It was a tight-knit community. And as far as Catherine's experience growing up in Mississippi, I'll have to let her tell you that.
Thank you. Mississippi was a really dark place for me, and it's kind of painful and a little triggering to go back there. But, you know, I dealt with a lot of isolation as well. I definitely have experienced some very similar stuff to what Jim has described. A lot of discrimination, a lot of harassment. Growing up as an assigned male individual, it was really... really vicious, you know, growing up and coming to terms with my gender in Mississippi. You know, it was devastating. We faced discrimination. We faced assault. I was threatened with a shovel. Mississippi was a really dark place for me, and it's hard to go back there to kind of describe that.
Now, about what age was this for each of you that you either came to that realization or to the decision that to the realization, yes, I am transgender, or at least the decision to move forward on that?
Well, personally, myself, I have described myself as a womanish person or a girlish person with like the brain of a male for quite some time. I used to tell like partners before getting into a relationship that I worked more like a man than a woman, so you'd have to get used to that. And they were like, well, that's cool, you know. But it never actually dawned on me until after Catherine came out, like, what label that fit under it. It was like, it was several months later, because I came out as gender fluid, and kind of swing between both for a while. But I just eventually realized that didn't fit me very well, that I couldn't get past the physical aspect of myself for quite some time. It was holding me back. And really, I was, what, age 29 when I came out as bigender and fluid. And then I came out a year later as a trans man. And, you know, although I still live a lot of ways non-binary, but I do now realize that I'm more of a binary male than I ever have realized about myself. Hmm. So I didn't come to terms with it completely until I was almost 30.
Yeah.
But it's definitely been something I've dealt with for quite some time. You know, I'll just be honest, Catherine deals with a lot of social anxiety, and sure, so it's hard for her to speak up on a lot of issues.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I deal with that too, but not as badly. So I'm pretty outspoken and pretty outgoing in that regard. But feel free to ask whatever.
Sure. So at some point then, the two of you start a friendship that eventually becomes more. Kind of take us through that a little bit.
All right. Well, we were young when we met. Catherine was 11 or 12, and I was like 13, and our parents knew each other, and so we would like go be around each other because our parents knew each other, and then we were like, hey, I kind of like you, you seem neat, so we exchanged phone numbers, and we would, like if our parents were out to dinner, you know, catching up or whatever, we'd be playing footsie under the table, and passing glances and stuff. But eventually, after about 8 months, we were found out, and our parents were like, y'all are too young for this, and you know, we're disappointed and all this stuff, and you need to wait several years and before you start a romance with someone, and you don't even know yourself, much less love. So You know, it was that kind of thing from our parents. So we were pretty much forced to separate and not see each other. And then after that, we came back together in Austin, Texas. And she was living there for a few months and I was moving there. And after a little while, she was like, hey, I need a place to stay. And I said, you could come here. And we lived together for about a year. And then we decided to be together after that point and just see, you know, what could have been, I guess, if we had gotten to stay together when we were younger.
Yeah. We are kind of critical thinkers and what's the word I want to use, Becca? I kind of deny the existence of cosmic, whatever, but
destiny, fate, soulmates.
But it sure seems like this is one of those cases where, like, be damned, you just can't keep love apart.
Right. That's what we thought too. Like, you know, it just really hit us in the face after living together for a year and be like, gosh, we've become best friends again. Like, how can we deny this? You know. And we just had to go for it. It was a lot of people were like, wow, I never would have thought, you know, we all would have been together, you know, kind of thing from our hometown. But, you know, because we had gone separate ways. Like, she'd moved off to one state. I'd moved to another. She moved to North Carolina when she was young. And I moved to Alabama not long after that. And anyway, yeah, we ended up both together in Austin, Texas years later. And it was really like serendipitous, even for us. You know, we felt that way about it.
That's so cool. Now you're in Austin. Life is pretty good. You have, there's a daughter from a previous relationship and another on the way. Good jobs, nice townhome, everything's happiness, sunshine and rainbows. And then you were in a car accident.
Yes. Then there's a car accident. I'm 5 months pregnant I go to the doctor and, the doctor says, baby's fine. I was in a lot of pain. It flared up my back again. I had to go through physical therapy. It was a lot of strain on our financial situation because after that, I wasn't working anymore. So we did have to end up moving back to Mississippi. We lived with Catherine's parents. It was quite unusual. They were going through a separation at that time. So it was very tense, to say the least. And with things, how that was going for them, it was just very awkward. And we were there for 6 weeks while we waited to get things ready to get our another townhome again there in Mississippi so we could start over.
So during this time, let's kind of intersect back into the timeline. Where are you both in your gender journey?
We were both living as our old gender. We were both trying to have this hetero lifestyle for a while. And it was just, we were denying ourselves. We were hurting ourselves so badly. And then, you know, because we were hurting and denying ourselves our authenticity, a lot of emotional distress came along with that. So once our child came along and we were having our second child, it just really, really sunk in deep about our gender issues. Like the fact that I was pregnant again, the fact that, you know, my breasts were growing larger. Like these things were really making me more dissonant. Mm. And even though I enjoyed the fact that I could bring another life into this world, it just also made me very dissonant. And that's really what made me start to question my role as an assigned female individual. Did that really fit who I was? Mm. And then, as well as for Catherine, this being her first child to experience the whole entire pregnancy with a partner, it made her like long for that as a parent to want to have that role. And like, really, it just brought it to the forefront of our minds and of our relationship and our roles in that our relationship. And it's having our youngest child really changed a lot for us.
Yeah. And it sounded like from kind of looking at your story that, that you've long had a struggle with immediate or near immediate family being accepting and welcoming and all the way around, right? From the relationship being existing in the first place, and then the baby coming, and not very many people seem to be excited about that, and then you have all of these gender identity things going on.
Exactly. Well, they knew that we both struggled internally. They just didn't really understand why. And because we struggled, we were drinking. We were doing, things to suppress that pain, to suppress and can further, isolate that identity from popping up. We didn't want... I guess we really didn't want to admit. We didn't want to admit that we were both transgender. And it was really ugly, But once we came to that realization, we're able to accept that. Those walls of isolation, those painful memories of having to live as the wrong gender started to really break down. And, they still are. Those walls are still coming down to this day. It's going to be years before, we're really healed from a lot of the trauma that we went through. But we're doing the work. We're doing what it takes to get better and to make our lives better from everything that's happened.
You said during this time, Catherine has come out as transgender at work. And and that did not go well either, to add even more to the plate, right?
Right. Surely. That was a really hard thing. She came out on social media. We told our parents and friends. So she felt it only necessary to come out at work because she was working as a landscaper, doing a lot of hard physical labor. She wanted to tend to flowers and grow things in the dirt, but she didn't want to dig ditches with shovels and haul wheelbarrows full of sod and, move big boulders and your things. But I know she can explain a little bit better than I could about what she was really feeling during that time.
For sure. I've dealt with gender issues my whole life. Again, growing up assigned male in the South, it was really, really difficult to come to terms with. I was in denial for a really long time. Although, I can look back and I can remember times of, just having normal gender expressions, feminine gender expressions as a child and getting scolded and reprimanded. No, that's not for boys. And it was just really, really difficult to come to terms with that. Of course, years later, when we were discussing now, at the time when I was coming out, I was, like James said, I was really fearing the loss of all social support. This felt like, in a way, like the death of my old self. I felt like I was coming to the end of my old life. And I literally, it was a life or death decision. I literally felt like I could go on no more being perceived as not me. So it was really, really painful, and I was really afraid. It turns out that those suspicions were valid. I did lose many family members, many loved ones, people that I thought would be, in my corner for life. They're not there anymore. However, that loss is painful. I have found, within the trans community, a chosen family, and that's really been amazing. My trans and gender nonconforming siblings and I, we're working to make the world a better place. And I just have to kind of try and, we'll talk more about my work with the Lifeline, but I just have to try and be that advocate I wish was there for me as a young person growing up isolated in the South, fearing the loss of all support. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, definitely. I consider myself very fortunate. There was a time when, so we were married. We had one kid. The second was hoped for, but we hadn't really gotten that far. When I said, "Hey, this is not just something that I do. I got to face facts here. This is who I am, and I have to do something about that." And then, and to go from there. And thankfully, Becca stuck with me and has been my number one fan. But there was a point I really feared that, you know, again, my parent, I talked this last week on the show. I'm from a town of 1,400 people in the middle of a cornfield. You know, when one of my friends came out as gay, like everybody whispered about, "Did you hear that so-and-so is gay? Oh my God." Like it was a big deal. So my God, to have somebody be trans. And that's probably why I didn't come out until I was in my 30s. But
yeah.
But I worried about my parents and my sisters. But finally, I had to get myself to the point where, if it came to that, my priority is my wife and kids. I've got more years left on this earth with them than with anyone else. And and if I have to choose, I hate to think about being in that position, but I know so many people are, that's my choice, you know, like they are my team, and that's worked out for us. So I totes yeah. get that.
Very true. That's what we've had to choose to. So for yeah. sure.
Now back into the timeline here. You are back in Mississippi. I'm trying to keep with it here. we've got a new baby, and then the series of unfortunate events starts happening, right? You get a bunch of money stolen, and
yes,
and you try to get help, but the help isn't there.
Right. It was a sad time, you know. It really was. We thought we wouldn't make it out. We didn't have any clue how we were gonna make it out, with family not accepting at this point, and churches and nonprofit charity organizations, and even homeless prevention organizations in the area did all turn us down. And so then, you know, with that money being stolen and not being able to make rent, of course, you know, eviction processes begin. Mm-hmm. And we didn't want to go through that. Like, so we couldn't pay our electric, we couldn't pay rent, we couldn't pay anything. So our electric was the first to go. We were researching like crazy, where can we go? Where has homeless resources? Where is a place that we could be free to be ourselves? And we found a little clinic in Denver, Colorado, that had trans resources for free. It was a homeless resource, and they had lots of shelter programs and transitional housing options. So we thought, yeah, that sounds perfect. Let's do it. So we packed what we could into our car, and we left out. It took us 2 days of nonstop driving, except for pit stops, and we made it into Denver.
Wow, that's crazy. Just the thought of, you know, picking up your whole life into your car and mm-hmm. and not knowing what's going to be there when you get there. Like, you've done a little research, yeah. but. You know, God, and especially, like, the thing that pisses me off the most, and if anybody who's listened to this show for longer than 5 minutes will know where this is going, but the in your hour of need, in desperation, uh-huh. it's the churches and the charities of all people, who are supposed to reach out and help people mm-hmm. in their time of need, that shut the door. In fact, there was a story that just broke this week. In South Dakota, with Isabella Red Cloud, who is a two-spirit woman that was denied service at a food kitchen, soup kitchen. Yeah, like that kind of stuff really pisses me off.
Yeah. Because those are the places that are not afraid to ask you for your donation. But then when you're in need of help, then they're going to turn you away.
Yep.
Right. You know, it was really sad. And a couple of them, I asked, you know, well, why? And, you know, one of them said, we just don't have the funding. Another one said, well, you don't go to church here. We like to reserve numbers. And so it was just like, it was disheartening to say the least. But, you know, we kept hope that we could find a better way and a better life. For ourselves, you know, we literally had to just try to make it, just forge one, because it wasn't happening in Mississippi, that's for sure.
Yeah. No, I'm completely off notes now, so I will probably forget details in the storyline here, but so now you're in Colorado, and so you're doing what, like freelance yard work and house cleaning, that sort of thing, to try to get money to get by? Like, how does that work? When you arrive, what was that experience like?
Oh, wow. Well, we did have Catherine's last paycheck that we took because since we didn't have enough for the bills, we didn't want to spend what we did have on, you know, we had to survive. So we took what we had. So we were trying to milk every penny and using a lot of the homeless resources there. Then I found that there was a auto auction that you could work day, like temp work, just for a few hours to get a few bucks each day. But it was during the snow. So I was having to go in the snow and drive, you know, 30, 40 cars a day. For about $35 a day, and then find work on Craigslist. I posted ads for house cleaning before we left for Mississippi in Denver, and had house cleaning gigs lined up before we ever got there.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Hit the ground running as soon as we got there. We had about 7 different clients already lined up for that next week. And then I just started right in with the housekeeping. It picked on up. I had 11 different families that I was cleaning for, and some that would call just every once in a while, and several like one-time only people that was just like, hey, I'm just moving. I need someone to help me clean up afterwards and things like that. We traveled all over the state of Colorado doing that for a year.
Wow.
It was hard, but it was definitely beautiful. We got to see a lot of territory, a lot of beautiful, beautiful scenery.
Yeah. Oh, Colorado alone is a beautiful place. And then, so then now you are, have you moved out further west now, or you're in Oregon?
We are in California
now. All right.
Right. Our window to our camper got smashed out by the Colorado Road Department about a week before we were going to leave to come out to the Pacific Northwest. And we were stuck in Grand Junction, Colorado for about a month and a half, and started doing the same thing, doing house cleaning jobs and different things there. And one of the guys that I cleaned his house, he offered to let us get the check from the insurance company to replace the window at his place. So we waited around in Grand Junction a month and a half for that check to come. Then we took it and came out to the Pacific Northwest on that. We made it into Spokane after a lot of driving, but it was gorgeous. Utah was amazing. I'd never seen the desert like that. It was really, really amazing. And then, yes, we spent a year in Portland. I worked at a call center there. And then, unfortunately, found out last June that I have fibromyalgia. So that's added another thing to us to kind of stress about and deal with. But, you know, at least we have some answers and are trying to get to where I need to be therapy-wise.
Yeah. When last we talked, you were working on the disability and like getting the doctor's things lined up? How's that coming?
Coming well. I've had two disability appointments, one with a medical examiner and one with a mental examiner for the PTSD. I have one more round of paperwork that we are about to send off. We have to finish that right after this. We got half of that done. And then, after I get that sent off, they should be sending me a response. Hopefully they'll review it and it'll be approved. That would be amazing.
That would be great. Yeah. So that brings us to now. I think this is a good time to kind of break and talk about some of the activism and things that you are both doing. But before we do that, we're going to take a quick break here. We'll be back in just a moment with our guests, James and Catherine Blake. You're listening to Sarah Talk. Sarah Talk is made possible by our patrons. We love our patrons. If you're not a Sarah Talk patron, you're missing out.
We should do a parody show for bathroom bills at the dog park. Like dogs fighting over which dog gets to pee where.
Or the owners.
Yeah. I feel uncomfortable that my dog has to shit on the transgendered lawn. Fuck that.
Our Patreon fans get access to special patrons-only content, like this nearly two-hour-long bonus episode where we break down Texas Senate Bill 6, the bathroom bill, with our special guest, Jake Vahaba.
My dog hunches over and takes a big runny shit. It's going to do it with other straight shit dogs.
Which is the argument I hear.
Yes,
so.
Yes, exactly what
my dog knows what it is. And it may fuck other men dogs sometimes. And pillows and shit, my kid. But I'm not having my dog shit next to other transgendered hump dogs.
Not only do our patrons get access to all previous patron-only specials for less than the price of a tall whatever Starbucks tries to pass off as a coffee, you'll get an ad-free version of the show, which often includes outtakes and extended segments. And of course, we'll give you a special shout-out on the show. Become a patron now for as little as $1 per episode. Go to patreon.com/saratalk today. That's patreon.com/saratalk.
In today's health-conscious society, you have many beverage choices. But do you know what's in all of them? So much sugar, sodium, and things you can't even pronounce. Dihydrogen monoxide. What's that? Sometimes you wish you just had a simple, more elegant solution for your beverage needs. Introducing H2O, the first ever chemical-free thirst quencher. H2O is simple, simply composed of three portions of two elements, hydrogen and oxygen. H2O means chemical-free, unlike water, which is filled with all sorts of shit. When we tested H2O, we found traces of no other elements. So pure, the bottle may as well be fucking empty, with all the same nutritional content as a breath of cool mountain air. First widely featured on Goop.com, actress Gwyneth Paltrow revealed that she exclusively uses H2O for her vaginal steaming process. After all, why use water when you can steam it with H2O? So now we invite you to run out to your local garden hose and drink that shit. Remember, it's not water, it's H2O.
H2O bottled by Flint Bottling Company in Flint, Michigan. Product not actually endorsed by Goop or Gwyneth Paltrow. Please do not use H2O for vaginal steaming, or better yet, please do not steam your vagina. H2O is actually just water. Water is a set of molecular compounds. It's a chemical. Everything is a chemical.
Welcome back to Sarah Talk. We are joined today by our guests, James and Catherine Blake. Now let's talk about the work that you're doing in activism and things out in the community. Let's start with the blog that you're running. It's called Two Trans, One Van.
Yes. Two Trans, One Van started as an idea, a suggestion from a few of our friends, and they were just like, you should put your story out there. It's a really great story. People should hear what's really happening. to, you know, to transgender people, like what we are really facing. And so we did. I've been writing for quite some time. So as Catherine, we both have written for years, something that's been very important to us. And so we did. We just jumped right in. We started talking about our lives, our history, our story, our outreach, and it led us here 8 months later.
Yeah. And Catherine works as a volunteer on the Trans Lifeline. That's one of those places that I want to get. I've reached out to try to get somebody from their organization on, but I know they are just swamped because there's not enough volunteers to cover the hours for the number of calls, especially with Donald Trump being elected. The spike in the number of calls has just been unmanageable. So, but go ahead and let's talk about that.
Thank you. Yes, I've been volunteering with the Trans Lifeline now for this is the 15th month. However, now I have been brought on full time as a staff member with the Trans Lifeline.
Awesome. All right. Yes.
Good.
Thank you. I'm now a team lead and staff operator for the Lifeline, and we are very happy to announce that now we are rolling out 24-hour coverage.
Yes.
So that was
awesome.
Yes. The organizers came and spoke with me about switching over to the overnight schedule. So that's something that we've done as kind of basically we are making this 24 hours for the Trans Lifeline right now. So I'm on Monday through Friday. It's a full-time job and it's just really amazing. This has been like full-time advocacy and like full-time volunteer work for over a year now. So it's just really amazing and an awesome and amazing step for the organization. We are hoping to roll out more like staff operators as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes us between 2 to 3 operators on call at any given time to handle the amount of calls that we have coming in.
Yeah.
So you're absolutely right. Simply not enough volunteers. While we've trained over 400 operators, we only have about 80 or so that are on in any given month. So there's definitely a need. Right now we are only kind of recruiting for our staff members from within the volunteer pool. So I just kind of wanted to add that in as well.
Yeah. So, and I know, and for folks who aren't familiar, the Trans Lifeline is a toll-free lifeline number that you can call. It's staffed. It's by trans people for trans people. One of the interesting things that I'm waiting to see unfold, I'm in a Facebook group for parents of transgender children. And there's been some talk in there of developing a kind of a down level network of volunteers who come from the group of people who have transgender children who are willing to work the lines and kind of be the, you know, if you call and hey, I really need to talk to somebody, then okay, well it's going to be a wait if you want to speak to someone who actually comes from the transgender experience personally. But if you're willing to talk to an ally in the community, you know, press 2 or whatever. So I'm again, that's, you know, that's just chatter on the Facebook groups, but I'd love to see that unfold. I think that would be awesome.
Absolutely. And we are very innovative. We were created specifically to address the need in the community. We are a crisis outreach, but callers don't have to be in a crisis to call us. We're basically there to talk about anything. We are not a reporting agency. So what that means is we don't call the authorities on people for any reason unless they specifically ask us to. We find that a lot of the time when the authorities get called on a trans person experiencing a crisis, oftentimes that can make the situation inadvertently worse. So that's not something that we do. We're simply a safe place to talk, to listen primarily, and to offer support and encouragement for whatever our callers are going through.
Now, one of the things that I've wondered about being a trans person that kind of volunteers in that capacity, knowing that a lot of us do have anxiety and various triggers, and when the call comes in and you just don't know what you're going to get, I guess you can speak from your own experience, but you know, has there been a time where you've had a call that kind of set you off, and then is it part of the training maybe to talk about kind of that self-care that's required after a really intense interaction?
Absolutely. I think that that's vital. Self-care is very important, and even more so when you're helping others. You know, for me, for example, I try and pay attention to the acronym HALT. If I catch myself feeling hungry, angry, lonely, or tired, I'll immediately stop and try to address those feelings. Also, you know, there's many, many other forms of self-care. One of the best self-care activities that I really enjoy doing is coloring. So, yes, self-care is very important. Absolutely. And, you know, I like the saying as well, one cannot pour from an empty vessel. So, you know, both for our callers and for the volunteers who are working with the callers, that is vital. As far as any calls that have kind of been really triggering, and it's really hard, especially when we get calls from individuals who are very young and dealing with crisis. We deal with a lot of situations where sometimes it's hard not to be able to. Sometimes it's like when the caller phones in, there will be just a sense of responsibility to want to do something about it, but we literally can't. It's like all of our callers are anonymous, so. You know, if someone's life is in danger, we're just there to talk with them. And it can be really difficult. Mm-hmm. You know, as a parent myself, I'll hear from callers. Callers as young as like 10 and 11 years old that are dealing with crisis and all sorts of issues. So it can be very triggering. Also, we get a lot of harassment, a lot of prank calls, a lot of trolls and stuff like that. We kind of have to sift through that on a daily basis as part of our job. And We try to block them as soon as they come in, but it can be really difficult, especially with like phone number spoofing and all of that kind of stuff that exists.
God, that's ridiculous. That as many times as I have looked at this information and listened to the ads, I had never even once thought that even existed.
Yeah, that like, just blew my mind now. Wow, people can be so low.
Yeah, It's definitely disappointing when a lot of your calls are like that, you know?
Yeah. So before we move on, let me throw that out, the information there. It's translifeline.org. If you do need to call, 877-565-8860. In Canada, 877-330-6366. And we will, of course, have this information on the episode notes for this show. What else, besides this kind of stuff, what other things have you guys got going on, irons in the fire?
Well, with our new Patreon account, Patreon account is very, fresh and new. We are starting to roll out patron only, material that is really exciting. Yeah, this is the first time I'll be doing anything like that. Everything thus far has been for free. We did do a couple of t-shirt fundraisers. Unfortunately, they were not successful. So it was just an experimentation. And so that's why we're switching over to a different platform with Patreon. It's a lot of fun, I guess, trying to do that. Also, I am the moderator of two support groups for transgender people online on Facebook. One is Transgender Support 30 Plus, and one is the Transgender Support Family. Both are pretty active groups, especially the Transgender Support Family. They take a lot of people in to the side and like what they call a 911 chat if there is someone going through crisis, and they talk with them and give them that support there through Facebook chat as well. And they do that. We do that a lot. I've only participated in two in the last couple of weeks because we've been dealing with being stranded and having to keep everything going for ourselves for the 3 weeks today, actually. But yeah, we've been here at the truck stops, just still doing our thing, still making videos and blogs, still, you know, taking calls. Catherine has been just working through it anyway. But hopefully we can still bring some new ideas forth. I would love to be able to do a storytelling platform where I tell other people's stories too.
Yeah.
Not my own, but you know, I'm branching out there. I think the homeless transgender people that are homeless and transgender face overwhelming odds, and especially just transgender people in general, but to be homeless on top of it really adds I think, a great deal more of a burden.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and one thing that really kind of stuck out to me about your own story was, a key reason why I thought, yeah, let's lift this up. God, how easy it would have been at any stage in any of those, you know, one more notch, two steps back. Could it have been to just give in and give up and say, well, you know, forget it. But you didn't, and you stuck together, and you pressed on, and you're raising your kids, and you're doing the right thing. And I think that's awesome. Like, that's the kind of stuff I want people to hear, you know?
Thank you. That means a lot. And it has been hard. We've faced ridicule. We have faced a lot of discrimination along the way in different ways. But like you said, we just have to keep going, because we've got these two kids and they are our inspiration. They are what keeps us really striving to do better. And, you know, you're right. It could be so easy just to pick up a bottle of alcohol and drink it and kill the pain instead of just holding each other and crying, you know. But I would rather let it out. I would rather, you know, feel this existence to its fullest and know that I'm doing my absolute best for myself, for my kids, for my family. And it might be not be someone else's best, but this is my best, and this is what I got.
Talk about, just real briefly, and I guess we're kind of wind down here. We're coming up on the on our time. So what is life like for you now? You were hoping to save up for a little bit better of a camper, because you just the challenges that were coming along with, you know, there's kind of a cramped space and having to go, you know, dump frequently and all of those things that I think people don't kind of recognize maybe what that all entails.
It entails a lot, you know. It's really a daily thing. Even while being stranded, we still have to try to maintain. With such a small space, there's lots of cleaning that's involved. There's lots of organization. For us, a lot of times, well, now we've been using, thankfully, the microwave, but we have to dig out this big camping stove and all of this gear and all this if we want to cook a meal a lot of times. And it's just a lot of just not, you know, as convenient as some people's lives. But it has been more convenient, I would say, to be here at the Talk Stops to use microwaves all the time. That has really been an improvement. But as far as being homeless, it's living in a camper, we would love more space. Oh my gosh, mm-hmm. We would love more space. We have been trying to get a camper. We had our GoFundMe that you had found. That was for us to hopefully raise enough money to get a camper, to pull with our camper van, to just extend how much room we have. But now we're really, you know, we're wanting that same thing so we can put it someplace. And we found a lot. We have one picked out here in the Central Valley of California. And we have the spot we want to go. We just have to obtain that. And now with Catherine being staffed at the organization, that is more of a reality for us in the coming days. We have to get our camper fixed. It's got some electrical issues right now preventing it from being able to run. But thankfully, we have been just fine here. There's been a lot of community resources that have pulled together for us just yesterday or day before yesterday. We had a church here that did come and deliver us some food and things to help us in between. It's really nice. The people around here have been very accepting, so it's made it a lot easier. Had this taken place in another state, we may have not be in such good spirits about it, but hopefully we're valued customers here at these this travel area, so that's nice. It's definitely a unique lifestyle, constantly showering in truck stops, being on the road all the time, usually. having to go from place to place to get resources, only having enough storage space for 2 days worth of food at a time, and 2 days for the week at a time, and not just being able to, okay, I'm hungry, let me just, you know, do this real quick. Most of the time, it's very, a lot of drudging work that goes into it. It's like, get out the tarp, lay out the equipment, get out the box, pass the dishes, you know, connect the propane, get the stove prepared, get the food ready, then wash up everything in the from our storage bin with the dishes, wash all that up, dry it all out, pack it all back underneath the bed for the storage area. A lot of work. But, you know, dumping our small septic tank every 2 to 3 days as well and is definitely a challenge when you come to areas where they want $10, $15, and $20 to dump a 2.5 gallon holding tank. So it makes it definitely a challenge to find places to safely and sanitarily rid ourselves of our waste. But luckily here, it's only $3. So that's been a big plus as well. So we are definitely looking forward to the coming months when we can get a place. Hopefully that'll be in the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, that's awesome. And, you know, I think kind of that description of cooking brought me back to my, when I was young, I mean, we camped a lot in the summer. And that was, you know, quote, vacation for us. It's a lot of damn work. And when you get back from that, you feel like you need another vacation.
Right.
But that's your perpetual life right now. So, you guys are real strong to keep doing that. And stay positive. Like, that's what I love. That's what I love.
Thank you.
And also,
I
want to talk just briefly about because I think people may miss it if they don't have their trans hat on. Showering at a truck stop is not just showering at a truck stop when you're a transgender person.
It's very interesting. We get a lot of times, do y'all need separate shower rooms? You know, we get, you know, like, how long are you going to be? Because we're a whole family of four. So, you know, and like stuff like that. And but it's definitely been a challenge. Although thankfully in Denver, Washington, Oregon, and California, thankfully we've not had any problems. As far as, like being, you know, bathroom access or anything like that. Of course, they do have the gendered bathrooms, but being able to have the private area of the shower is a lot better because we can go in there as a family and we can take turns, we can all rotate, you know, and get everyone done at one time. So it's a hassle and it takes like 3.5 hours to get everything done, but we've worked around, gotten used to it at this point after almost 3 years.
Yeah. All right. So before we go here, just, is there anything we've missed? Are there anything else that you want to let folks know? We're going to put, of course, we'll put links to all of the things that we've discussed, the Trans Lifeline, your 2 Trans 1 Van project stuff with your Patreon. Is there anything that we've missed that you'd like people to know?
Just in closing, I just wanted to say thank you to all of our supporters and to, you know, everyone who's working so hard within the intersectional community, working to make this world a better place. Also, I just wanted to say thank you to everyone at Trans Lifeline and also to the whole community and all of our allies. You know, it's just really amazing and touching. And I just wanted to say thanks. For sure. That's definitely something that touches my heart has been the outreach of and support of the transgender people and trans allies alike has been very touching, very helpful along the way. There's been a lot of people to really reach out to us and just say, you know, we're thankful you're here. We're thankful you're telling your story, and we're thankful for the work that you do. And that we're likewise, you know, likewise, we're very thankful for the people like yourself doing this work, telling these stories, and getting the message of acceptance and intersectionality out there.
Yeah, we got to do whatever we have to, right? We got it. We have to do it. There's too many people that need us. Yeah. My final thought here, I would say, one of the things that, again, that impressed me about your situation and your story, especially, we talk a lot about politics and such on the show, and, you know, there's a stark divide between the two political parties in this country, and I hear so much from my friends on the right about the homeless condition as if they know anything about it, about government assistance, about, you know, it's the lazy people sitting on their couches collecting government checks and they don't want to work, right? And that's
right.
Garbage. So
it certainly
so, but for me, it's not that, you know, that you are working hard, you've taken the odd jobs, you've driven across the country, you've done all of the things that whatever you had to do to get by,
right,
to do it, but your kids are watching and they're seeing strong adults handling business when business needs handled, mm-hmm, and staying positive about it, and I love that.
thank you. That's definitely was, it's been hard to keep that, but keep that going. But we try so hard to be good examples to our kids.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
All right. Well, I think that will do it. But definitely, I want to stay in touch. Let me know how you guys are doing, and we'll check in from time to time. We'll definitely. I've got you on Facebook, and we'll be in touch.
That sounds great, Sarah. It was nice talking to you both. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you as well.
Thank you.
Big thanks to James and Catherine for coming on the show today and talking about their experience. Again, like, you know, we talk on the show a lot about people who are struggling. And again, I come from a very privileged place. And so because of that, I kind of feel a duty to use the platform that I do have to tell those stories and lift people up who are doing the right things in those situations. So, you know, yes, we talk about homelessness, and yes, we talk about the lived trans experience where people are discriminated against and threatened and harmed. And while I don't personally experience any of that, and in fact, because I don't experience any of that, I think that makes it all the more important to tell the story. I'm editing this in because I didn't think to say it when we had James and Catherine on the phone. So I'm sorry we won't get their reaction. But one of the things that I want to start doing with the show is each month to highlight someone who is in need, who needs our help, and drive our collective to reach out and help them. And that could be people who need financial support, or if it's, you know, something where you can just send an email or write a letter and give somebody some encouragement, something like that. So each month, I think we're going to try to pick out something to do. And then I'm going to, as the show, we're going to support that initiative as the being the example, right? So in April, my friend Saturn, who I worked with back in the day at Disney, decided to start crowdfunding for his top surgery. So I supported his top surgery fund on GoFundMe. So I'll post a link to that too. And then for James and Catherine, they seem like such good people, and I really want great things for them, and especially for those kids to you know, I want them to have nothing but positive experiences in life. And And so if we can support them as a show, we're definitely going to do that for the month of May. And then throughout the month of May, I'm going to keep reminding you about this. And this is your call to action to help support them as if you can. We appreciate it if you can do that. If you go to saratalk.com, right there in the top banner, along with the links to our episodes and our subscribe links, you'll also find one called Rally Cry. Go check that out and help support our friends. Thank you for those of you who listen every week. We love you so much. To our patrons, you're the best. We picked up a new patron this past week or so. Josie, again, thanks for becoming a patron. You know, with their patrons, it's with that kind of support that allows us to keep doing the show. And I hope to do more things like this where we reach out and just let people tell their stories. I try to make the show an interesting mix of news kind of roundtable political discussion about things that are happening in the news, letting people come on and just kind of share their stories, having good guest authors and writers and musicians, and that sort of thing. So we try to mix it up, but it's definitely the support of the patrons who allow us to be able to do all the things we're doing. So thank you for that. Thanks for listening again. This is episode 54 of Sarah Talk, and we'll see you next week.
Sarah Talk is made possible by listener support. Visit patreon.com/saratalk to become a patron and help keep this program going. Contact Sarah and company by email at producer@saratalk.com or call 224-40-SARAH. That's 224-407-2724. And follow us on social media, facebook.com/saratalkradio and on Twitter @saratalkradio. Sarah Talk is a production of Sarah Austin Media.